Hi, I'm Michael Sinoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business, all from home, from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. Internet marketing and marketing in general can be a minefield. Thousands of people every day lose their shirts trying. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. It is my mission to help you who are very busy with their careers handle your lives more efficiently, to bring you the best information from the most knowledgeable sources, and for you to select and generate that information free from outside advertising, and to give you access to this information quickly in a downloadable format that you can take with you on the road. Now let's get going. Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's a great recording if you're considering or are already a marketing consultant. It's an interview with the Vice President of Sanor Sales Institute. In this recording, Dave Mattson is going to talk about four of the major different types of personality and how to sell to them. You'll also hear a no-pressure cold calling script that claims to land you 7 out of 10 appointments, no matter what you're selling. You'll learn how to befriend gatekeepers so they'll want to help you to get through to the decision makers. You'll learn the importance of fitting into your prospect's culture and how to match and mirror so that you do. You'll learn how understanding the difference between identity and role will help you handle stress, adversity, and rejection better. You'll learn what Dave means by monkey's paw and how to use it to get the reputation for the guy who gets results. You'll learn why, if you hear "send me the literature" during a cold call, you'll know you failed, in ways to avoid getting that response. You'll learn why you should only be lightly qualifying most prospects before face-to-face appointments, and some great ways to accomplish this, and much, much more. Psychology is a powerful tool. The more you know about the person or situation, the bigger the advantage you're going to have. And these tried and true techniques will help you analyze your prospects, get into their heads, and know exactly what's going to work best for them. So let's get going, and I hope you enjoy. For anyone who's seen a lot of different sales trainings out there, why is Sandler different?
Well, I would think Sandler is different in a number of ways. First, let's do delivery. Sandler certainly has facilitator-led training in seminars. We have a blended approach with technology and face-to-face training. But I think the thing that separates us from a delivery standpoint is ongoing reinforcement training. And what I mean by that is we've all been to the one-day seminars. I mean, I grew up on those, as you have. And they get us pumped up for a period of time. And certainly the seminar leader is not there to answer any of those ongoing questions. So what we've done at Sandler is we've opened up 220 training centers, and clients can come to us as often as they want to say, well, Dave, how do I get past a gatekeeper, or how do I better qualify? And they can either give us big picture questions or specific scenarios, like I'm in front of XYZ organization. Here's what they said. What should I do? And our trainers, who are really salespeople who train, can give them real life feedback. And we play their trainer, we play their coach, a lot of times we play their manager. So from a delivery standpoint, it's different, but also a content standpoint in a lot of different ways. But we have 1,000 hours of content, whether it's management or sales, and it's you-focused selling. If we're going to use our selling model as an example, we focus on the buyer, what's important to them, versus traditional selling, which focuses on a lot of features and benefits. And we have a combination of both buying cycles psychology and sales psychology, we put it together in a system called the Sandler Selling System. So we have thousands of tactics and strategies, but it's really how we've put it together, more conversational selling versus remembering a lot of scripts, which I don't think people do in front of a buyer.
What's the story of David H. Sandler? I understand he's the founder, and he began sales training and developing the Sandler system in the late 60s and the early 70s. What's his story? What did he start doing early? Where were some of the challenges he was having, and how did this all come to being?
Well, certainly David Sandler didn't wake up saying, I want to be a sales trainer. David was an executive in a family-owned cookie and cracker business. They were very successful, and one side of the family had a fight with the other side of the family, decided, hey, his side was out. So David woke up on a Monday unemployed, where he had been a CEO for years and years with a profitable track record. So what did he do? Well, he opened up the paper and saw that somebody was looking for a sales trainer slash business consultant. He answered the ad. It was a company out of Texas who's been in business for quite some time. He went down and followed the process, which had been the traditional model. Go in, meet and greet, features and benefits. And he had failed miserably because David is an introvert, and David was follow the process, and David would always follow the rules, and he read the manuals, and he went out and, as I said, failed miserably. And it wasn't because of talent. It's just that he wasn't a born salesperson. So he went back home and sat down with some psychiatrists and psychologists and said, what's going on in the human dynamic standpoint? Because I'm saying this, they're reacting this way. Why is that true? Because according to the scripts, when I draw a line down the center of the piece of paper and I'm using the Ben Franklin close and I'm doing all the positives on one side and the negatives on the other side, I have 15 positives and one negative. Of course, the negative I can overcome. They're supposed to say, yes, I'll take your product.
Let me ask you this. Are we talking the Zig Ziglar training?
With Paul Meyer, SMI.
Paul Meyer, okay.
Who has been in the business for a long, long time. And what David found was that his personality style and what he was doing didn't necessarily fit into the model. And he had gone and tried a different approach. Now, David, using the Sandler methodology, actually became one of the top distributors for SMI. And at that point, he said, hey, I'm going to go on my own. And David decided at that point to take his methodology, his approach, which was psychologically based, into the marketplace. And from there, it's been history.
Oh, so he answered an ad to sell motivational stuff, Paul Meyer stuff.
Yes.
And then he failed, but Myers did offer some training, but it didn't work, and he really wanted to make this work, so he developed his own and became number one?
Absolutely, yeah. And then from that point forward, he decided to open up the Sandler Sales Institute.
How long was he with Paul Meyer?
I think it was probably about 6 to 7 years.
He passed away how long ago?
David passed away in 1995.
Yeah, he was pretty young?
Yeah, he was early 60s, just very young.
Would he have a heart attack?
You know, I don't know. I think he'd gotten ill, and then all of a sudden, you know, he couldn't control it, and it was a cancer.
How long have you been with the company?
I've been with Sandler Sales Institute 2 years in the field selling training directly. I came to the home office to visit David to actually open up my own office in Connecticut, and at that point he said, Dave, stay with me, train all the new offices that we have, and I'll become your mentor. And I never left. I became David's partner with Edna Sandler and Bruce Seidman.
And is Edna his wife?
Yes.
What led you to Sandler? Were you looking for actual sales training yourself? Were you having challenges in what you were doing?
I was actually a client.
You were a client?
I was a client. I had owned a business and became very successful early in life. I lucked out, and I'd sold that business and tried to figure out what to do with myself into the next big venture. And I went to work for a neighbor who was a President's Club member. The President's Club is a term that we use for this local training centers that I've mentioned. And I sat in the room, and I started to say, well, I could do this because, again, I tend to be introverted by nature, and I'm a rehearser, and my parents are educators, so I grew up in that environment, so I rehearsed and rehearsed, became very good at it, and I went down to see Dave Sandler to see if I could open up a Connecticut office.
Okay, wonderful. So these offices, 220 training centers, are these somewhat like a Sullivan Learning Center where kids go in and learn, but for sales? Are they physical locations, or are we talking online training through the Internet?
We have both, but our centers are physical locations where we provide both management training and sales training.
So is a franchise required to open up a physical location?
Yes.
Okay. And it's staffed?
Well, sure. They have trainers and salespeople like any other office would.
I see. So Sandler launches the President's Club. Can you describe what that is and how that helped Sandler really expand?
Well, up to that point, which David grew up in the seminar business, as we all did, the President's Club, what he had found was the same people came time and time again to the seminars. And so what David developed was an ongoing reinforcement training program where he would fly into town, hypothetically, let's say Dallas, and he would say, come a day early and you can come to reinforcement training. And I'll come back four times a year and I'll show you how to apply what we've learned, and we can do a lot of brainstorming, and I'll help you take your sales to the next level. Well, that concept grew at a phenomenal rate to the point where he opened up franchises across the country where people would come to our center. Each one of our centers holds 20 hours of training every single month, whether it's the human relations track, the sales track, or the management track. And you can pick and choose. And so we have a three-year program where people can come to as much training as they want, because people don't get certain topics at the same speed. I've seen people at a prospecting seminar five times because they get different things each time they go. And we have application meetings where we show people how to apply what we've taught. And we also have what I'm going to call educational seminars, where we give them the tactics and theory behind whatever that topic is, whether it's prospecting or account management.
How do you answer this, David? What is selling, and how does it differ from marketing? For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.
It's interesting because I'd say that's they're close. I think that marketing is getting somebody's attention, getting mind share, getting the availability to say, yes, I have interest, let's talk. I think selling kicks in right after marketing leaves off in a way. Now that we have that interest, we have the peace of mind, what do we do to take the next step? How do we get them to make a commitment of some sort? Now, some marketing pieces obviously do that, but the human face-to-face type interaction, that's where selling kicks in, because people buy from people, and they buy from people who they like and trust. A marketing piece can't do that. It can send the message. It can relay the overall brand, but sales takes it to that next step, because I think most salespeople's biggest competitor isn't the company down the road. It's complacency. The buyer knows what they have now, and why would I make a change? And that's the human dynamic and interaction that's needed through selling.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. How would you say selling differs from negotiating, or would you say it's pretty similar?
No, I would say actually negotiating is a result of something that didn't happen correctly in the sales process. Now, I know that sounds counterintuitive, but if you've done the sales process properly, there should be little or no negotiating on the back end. We have a seven-step process, and we look at it as compartments. And I think if you haven't done a good job in the budget step, as an example, or really tying in your product, the value of it, to the ROI, then people will come back and arm wrestle. Now, we certainly have procurement offices where their job is to negotiate, but if you're negotiating over the table with your buyer directly, I think it's as a result of because something moved too quickly in the sales process and they're trying to get an even playing field or value per se, so they quote-unquote negotiate. We have a negotiating program, but again, if you do a great job in the sales process, you should never have to go to that course.
Who are your main customers? What kind of customers come into the Sandler training centers? What percentage do you see of people brand new in sales compared to existing salesmen? How would you break up the demographics of the people Sandler's training?
Well, we have two sides of the business. The side that I'm on for national accounts, we have the Fortune 1000 where we go in and provide on-site boot camps. To the training centers, to answer your question specifically, it's really companies that primarily under $500 million, and our primary market is for entrepreneurs or small business owners that cannot afford an internal training department. And they're looking for that next step. What do I do to take my people from where they are now to where I think they should be, whether I'm a manager or an entrepreneur? So we have a lot of people who are sole proprietors. We have lots of people who have a management staff of two or three and a sales staff of 10 to 15. And that's really our market. Now, across the industries, we're everywhere. We have a lot of technical salespeople, a lot of IT, insurance, financial. But quite frankly, we're in every industry that you can imagine. I get to live in a lot of different companies. The amazing thing is there's so many industries out there that I never knew existed. We're doing LASIK surgery, teaching doctors how to do better communication skills or engineers. They have no customer interaction, but it's internal within the organization that we have to do a better job. So we're all over the place.
So people considering getting into selling and using selling as a career, what are some of the advantages of a selling career?
The advantage of the selling career, they're never ending. I think, A, controlling your own destiny. A good salesperson never has to be threatened about the economy. Most of the managers that we train sometimes are concerned with layoffs or what's the economy going to do. But quite frankly, if you're a proficient salesperson, you can land on your feet anywhere. I think it allows you to get out of the office. It allows you to talk to a lot of different people. It also allows you to create your own destiny. And what I mean by that is most salespeople are commissioned somehow. So you can control your financial destiny. You can also control, since it's a two-way dialogue with another individual, how you act and also how you react to the other individual. So I think it's empowering. Unfortunately, in today's environment, you know, sales is looked upon with a frown. If you think about Hollywood, they haven't done any favors with the movies that have come out, whether it's Glengarry Glen Ross or Boiler Room or Tin Man, the rest of them. They're out there. It puts a negative slant on it. And unfortunately, I think sales as a profession has done that to themselves in the past. But 9 out of 10 sales professionals are people that are just wonderful individuals who have decided that this is the profession, and it is a profession that they want to be in.
So give me some ideas, because salesmen have this negative stereotype. Give me a couple tips on how you teach your San or train sales professionals to project a professional image.
Well, we project a couple different ways, Michael. I mean, certainly we'll go in and, again, let's not teach a lot of scripts. Let's talk to the other person. That's number one. So focus on the other individual. Don't focus on what's good for me and my company. Let's focus on what's good for the buyer, because it's good for them, and I can then go back and say, I've got a product or service that will help you. Then it's good for both of us. Also, let's set rules of engagement. We use the term called upfront contract. I think it's our job to lower the anxiety of a buyer, to create an atmosphere where people feel comfortable. So by telling people, here's what I want to cover today, here's how much time it'll take, and it's okay for you to say there's not a fit, and it's okay for me as a sales professional to say that also. That simple technique, which we call an upfront contract, you'd be amazed the physiology of a buyer just relaxes, because no one's ever said, it's okay, there may not be a fit today, and if you feel that way, it's okay to say that. And they have equal rights. And unfortunately, I think most sales professionals that don't do it correctly, they steamroll the process. So be cognizant of the other person, focus on them, go into it not really as a fact-finding mission, not with the product of the month, that regardless of what you say, I'm going to try to sell you this particular product. I think that's the wrong way to do it.
Give me an example for one of my HMA consultants, okay? They have someone who's made an appointment for them, they accept the appointment, and they're going to go in and meet the prospect for the first time, eyeball to eyeball. How could they use an upfront contract to lower that anxiety on the other end? Can you give me a word package that they could use?
I can. Unfortunately, it may be a touch of generic, but I'll give you the way to customize it for each one of the HMA consultants.
Sure.
It would sound like this. If you were my prospect, Michael, I would say, Michael, thanks for inviting me in today. I know last Tuesday, I guess we set about 45 minutes for today's appointment. Is that still good, Michael?
Yes, that'll be fine.
Great. Listen, we haven't worked together in the past, so the purpose of today's meeting is for us to ask each other a lot of questions to see if there's a fit. And if so, we can talk about some next steps 45 minutes from now. But you may want to ask me a lot of questions today. Hey, tell me a little bit about how you guys go to market, types of organizations that you work with or individuals, and some of the challenges that you've helped other companies with, and maybe the results. And I certainly would like to ask you some questions today, Michael, also concerning, and I would insert some of the questions that I want to know about. I want to know about A, B, and C. And at the end, what I have found, a couple things could happen, Michael. We may, after talking to each other, decide, hey, there's just not a fit. What you're looking for and what I'm able to help you with, it doesn't match. And that's okay. And either one of us should feel comfortable just saying, hey, I don't see there's a fit. On the other side, we may say, hey, you know what? It makes some sense. Let's continue talking. In which case, Michael, you'd invite me back for another meeting, and I can show you some of my thoughts and share with you some of the things that we've done for others that fit directly into the issues that you're going to share with me today. Is that fair?
That sounds fair. So what do untrained people do? Where do you see the big mistakes? An untrained salesperson, he'll go into a meeting and do what?
Well, I think an untrained salesperson shows up and says, Michael, thank you for having me. We've got about 45 minutes. Let me show you some of the things that I've done. And either I show you a PowerPoint presentation, or I basically start running my mouth, because there is a rule, 70-30 rule. Professional salespeople and the consultants for HMA should really only be talking 30% of the time. The buyer should be talking 70% of the time. So I think we show up and throw up, unfortunately. But if we're an HMA, we really should go in as the consultant, set the stage, ask some questions and pull, most people say, hey, let me tell you about me and my business, and then boom, and let me tell you about the products and services that I can bring to the table. Unfortunately, the buyer doesn't get to talk until midway through, if at all, on that first call. Big mistake.
So listening is absolutely key.
Yeah, and I think it's asking those laser-guided questions, because questions develop credibility. Think about that. It really does, more so than, let me tell you about my company, which started in 1920. You know, strap yourself in, Michael. This won't take long.
Right. What else do you teach your Sandler-trained salespeople ways to create a positive first impression when they're meeting?
Well, again, I think it's the upfront contract. There's a lot of psychological nuances to what I shared with the HMA group. But also, you're going to be doing some matching and mirroring. We have quite a few personality models that we teach. We teach DISC, which is a behavioral model that tells you how the other person interprets the world and what you can do to explain what you do in a way that connects with them instantly.
So you break buyers down into different categories?
Absolutely, because there are. Everybody views the world differently. Think about an auto accident. Unfortunately, you've never been in one, and you've asked for witnesses. There's 13 different views of what occurred. And as HMA, you know that you've gone into a million-dollar presentation, and people would just say, that was great. And you say to yourself, well, that works. And you go down the road and do another presentation, and it's a completely different reaction. They say, well, I don't get it. Why is that? Well, because everybody's different. So our job as an HMA consultant is not to sell the way we interpret the world. It's really to communicate the way that the buyer sees the world. They don't get paid to change the way they buy. You get paid to change the way you communicate.
What are some major communication errors that you see unskilled salespeople making?
They do a couple things. One, certainly spend way too much time on the technical side of the product and not the people side. As I said earlier, people buy from people. I don't think that they're cognizant of even dress code. When I'm on a sales call, and if I were calling on you, Michael, I would actually jot down some of the things that you're wearing, whether it's colors, types of shoes. And when I show up next time, I have very similar outfit on. Now, you would say, well, why is that important? Well, because psychologically, you're looking at me saying, do I like Dave? Is Dave like me? So there's a concept called matching and mirroring. And it's very important. We don't even know we do it. But if you go into any organization, they are all dressed very similarly. It's a culture. Your job is to fit into that culture. I also think that certain people are big picture people, whereas others are detail oriented. I happen to be personally a big picture person. So if you come in and give me all the details because it's important to you and you think that that's an interesting part of your product, you'd be boring me. You'd be killing me. And I would just say, hey, let's just cut to the chase. What is this? Your job is to figure out who's across the table and come prepared and be flexible to navigate and explain it differently. We actually, in our training courses, have them come up with three different types of presentations based on the personality that we're sitting across from.
So what kind of questions could an HMA consultant ask his prospect to determine what type of personality this guy is? Is he a big picture guy or detailed oriented? You have in your training specific ways to determine that?
We do, and actually we have a quick communication chart which I can make available to any one of your members, and they're welcome to have it. I'll send it right to you. But to answer your question specifically to that question, I would say, Michael, we have an awful lot to cover today. Would you like me to cover it in a 30,000-foot view or go right to the details? Most people will pick what they're comfortable with. I would have said, hey, let's stay 30,000 feet. My partner, Bruce, would have said, hey, let's get to the details. Tell me exactly how this works. Whereas I, as a buyer, don't really care. Or as an example, relationship questions. Let's just take a computer system. You may have mentioned that, hey, I bought a new computer system. I say, well, what's the relationship between your new computer system and the one that you had? And that alone will tell you whether you're a difference person or a similarity person. What does that mean? Well, what that means is some people view what's new sitting in front of them. Let's say an HMA consultant has brought a new idea. They're internally saying, is this something that is similar to what I'm accustomed to or completely different? Now, I am a similarity person, Michael. So if you're trying to get me to move with an HMA idea, tell me how it's the same as I have now first, and then tell me why I would go with you. What's the value add? But some people come in and say, let me tell you how this is completely different than what you're working with now and why it's better. I would not listen to a word that person said, because it's not the order of information that I need in order to make sense to me.
Are you teaching your trainees how to sell with integrity, and how important is integrity today when selling professionally?
Well, I think integrity separates you from the pack. If you think about the buyer side, most buyers can't differentiate you from your competitors. training is training. Now, I know that's not true. I know that we can guarantee a 20% increase in somebody's productivity or we'll fund the money. I know we're different, but they don't know we're different. Matter of fact, most people don't think they need training, or managers think that they could provide the training. So what separates us? Well, certainly our pricing model, which I don't want to get into that commodity. So it's the person across from them. So integrity is an integral part, but I think if you follow methodology and you really focus on the buyer, integrity oozes out. If it doesn't make sense for the buyer, don't move forward, because there's no reason to get them involved in a product or service that you're not going to bring a healthy ROI to that process. So I think, do you teach integrity? I think every technique that we teach will therefore transform into integrity into the process. But we don't have a class called integrity. If you need that class, you shouldn't be in the business.
Other than teaching and training on actual techniques, do you also work with your customers on a balanced life? Being in sales can be very stressful. Do you go into any kind of advice for handling stress or how to respond to adversity? Some of the mental things that really keep most people who come into sales out of sales within the next year.
Sales is a mental game. We have a concept called the IR, which is the difference between I, which is your identity, and R is your role. So for us, a healthy balance is important between work and life. We teach everything that we do in three areas. We call it the BAT, which is behavior, attitude, and technique. And again, I think that differentiates us, because most people spend time on technique training. We spend a lot of time on attitude training, how to think differently, behavior training, how to behave differently. And I used that IR term a minute ago, but what's the value of that to a professional salesperson within the HMA network? Well, think about this. Have you ever taken rejection personally? Or have you ever been in what we call a comfort zone, where you've done great, but you just can't break through that next ceiling? You can't take it to the next level. Well, why is that? Well, it's really an IR issue, which means a lot of people, especially in the marketing profession, take rejection personally, whereas they're rejecting maybe your idea, your concept, but they don't reject you as a person. But yet, because we've created our ideas, we've brought them there, they become part of us, and we take it very personally. The best thing that we could do is to help one of your members understand there's a difference between identity and role.
What have you seen over the years for the sales industry or the sales training industry? Like, what percentage of the people come into sales, leave sales? Is it a huge turnover, kind of like the insurance sales industry?
I think it really depends on what type of sales. I mean, do many people come into it thinking that it's easy and leave? The answer is yes. If you're in a industry where you have to go and cultivate your own leads, you use the insurance industry or financial industry or copier industry, they have, 100% turnover rate, which means 10 people come in and within 6 months, 10 people will leave, because that is a very difficult thing to do, which is to get up every day and make outbound cold calls. Now, if you do that well, it turns into a business. If you're in a different type of industry where you're more of a farmer, I think that there's a higher chance that you're going to be there for quite some time, because the pressure of developing leads, qualifying leads, and closing the leads is not the same. So overall, yes, there is a high turnover rate in our industry, but I think it's because they start off in an area that they're not well equipped, and maybe that's the cold calling area. But I think they may not leave the industry, Michael. They may leave that part of the job, but go into a different role within the sales arena, which may be more of a account manager, more of a farmer type. But really, hunters, the people that flush the opportunity, that is a difficult position, and a lot of people are not equipped. They go into it thinking it's easy. They don't prepare. They don't rehearse, and they'll go in because they're a people person and try to wing it. You know, salespeople have the gift of gab, which is our greatest asset, but it's also your greatest deficit. So I think if you're well prepared, you treat it like any other industry, your chances of succeeding are tenfold.
About being prepared, and that's knowing your market, knowing your prospect. Are there any techniques for conducting a competitor analysis that you could share with the HMA consultants that may help them maybe close more deals?
Sure, and I'm happy to forward you a quick form for a competitive analysis. But for competitive analysis, you certainly have the tried and true SWOT approach, right? The strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats. That's all there. You can certainly match up your product or service in the marketplace, comparatively speaking, to your competitor. But let's take it one step deeper. Go in and say, what are, as an example, my last 10 to 15 selling opportunities? What were some of the issues that I faced that the prospect said to me, here are my problems. Make a list of those, because you're going to see some patterns. If you find out that out of the last 15 selling opportunities, the buyers had these 6 or 7 consistent issues, do a competitive analysis on that. Where does my product and service compare to my competitors? What am I going to do to solve this particular person's problem? Because once you understand where your sweet spot is, and it could be different by individual within an organization, once you understand where that is, then all of your questions can help identify whether that's a true need of that person. And if not, there's chances are it's not going to be a fit. But also ask some very good questions that will help the prospect see that you're different. As an example, we do ongoing reinforcement training. I know our competitors don't do that. I know that. So I would say, how important is ongoing reinforcement training to you? If they say, well, it's not important at all, I'll ask a couple more questions. But if they say, well, it actually is important, then now I can drill down, because I would say one of the things that you may want to ask in your investigative process when you're trying to find a training organization is, hey, what's your ongoing reinforcement training program? What role does my manager get to play? So I actually help them investigate my competitors, because I know where my sweet spot is comparatively speaking. So I think it's very important to go in the marketplace, but figure out, do a historical review with your last X amount of buying opportunities. Find some patterns and say, where do I match up against my competitor in those areas? And then create a list of questions that will help the prospect really acknowledge, hey, that's important to me. I do want to find out whether you and everybody else that I happen to be investigating can do that. But if it's not important to them, realize that chances are, unless you're competitively priced, you may run into troubles a couple feet downstream here.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. My AQMA consultants charge consulting fees based on 8 different projects. I've had consultants charge fees for as low as $200 per project, and consultants who charge fees as high as $5,000 per project. What's the difference between those two consultants? And this is price setting strategies, and it seems like it always comes down to confidence. The guy with the confidence and knows his value is the one who's going to charge more money, because he believes that that's the value he's bringing. Compared to the guy who believes his value and time is only worth $200 per project, can your training get those consultants who don't have the confidence up to that higher fee charging?
Absolutely. And I think, yes, it's confidence. People buy conviction. It's true. If you believe it yourself, that oozes out to the buyer. We've all been in front of somebody who says, I'm not even sure if they believe what they're trying to sell. But there's something else, Michael, that your consultants can do immediately. We have something called the pain step, which is, what's the reason why people are looking at one of your projects? What pain are they in? What problem are they trying to take off the table? So what you're doing, if you will tie, let's say I have a particular problem, what you want to know is, what's the financial impact of that problem? How does it affect the organization? How does it affect you personally, the person I'm sitting in front of? And what is the financial ripple there? If you can tie in what the company impact is, the financial impact and the personal impact back to the project, you will actually charge more, and you can charge more, and they're happy to charge more. As an example, if I'm just trying to sell a seminar for $5,000, if we're going to use that as an example, unless I understand what your problems are, then chances are you say, well, that's a lot of money. But if you say, Dave, I have a closing problem, and I do some investigating, and I realize that it's costing you $30 million over the course of the year, and people are getting frustrated on your staff, and you've got a turnover problem, and that's costing you a lot of money, chances are $5,000 is easy. But if you're going too fast through the process and you're selling features and benefits versus selling solutions to their problem, you'll always be at $200 a project.
Is there anything within your training that gives your salespeople a unique tactic or strategy to get more business by offering or packaging premiums?
You know, at Sandler, we have something called a monkey's paw. And so let's talk about the HMA consultants, because they have, let's say, 1 of 8 projects. And everybody wants to go after the big project, right? We all want the big project. Unfortunately, with the big project means, A, more competitors, longer decision process, and people tend to analyze, right? They analyze every single step of this project because they want to know, am I getting value? Sandler has a strategy called a monkey's paw, which is my foot in the door strategy. So yes, I've got this $5,000 project on the table. Chances are, though, that you could break that down into chunks. Can you sell a small study? Is there a $200, $500, $1,000 project that you could start immediately when they're in the investigative mode of this other thing? It does a couple things. It breaks down the buyer-seller wall. You're no longer trying to sell. They're a client of yours. You get to walk the hallways, establish credibility, get to know the organization better. They get to see you working and producing results. It's a lot easier to get that $5,000 project when you've got another project in flow. The problem is ego. We all want the big one. In my world, as an example, when somebody wants a worldwide training program, that's a huge decision. I'll go in and sell a one-day seminar because I know once I'm in there and they can see what I can do and I get to break down that buyer-seller wall, I have a better shot at the worldwide program. But ego would say, let's go after the big one. And then we forget that a lot of small ones will get you the big one.
What's some good advice that Sandler teaches for finding new prospects?
Well, finding new prospects, we have seminars on that, Michael, but let's move back one, which is, does the HMA consultant have a prospecting plan? What does that mean? Most people are trying to find new people to talk to, but the key that they're missing is, how many people on a monthly basis do you need to talk to? So if you would take what you would like to do from a revenue standpoint and then say, okay, if I'm going to do X amount of dollars, I'm going to have X amount of clients, which means number of proposals on the street, which means number of meetings. Go down all the way down your funnel, reverse your sales funnel, to where it says, how many new conversations do I need on a weekly or monthly basis? Get that number. And let's hypothetically say that number is 50. Your next question is, where are they coming from? Which is what you've asked me. Where do you find them? Well, step number one is to create a list of all the areas that you could find those and that you currently are doing them. So as an example, whether it's cold calling, whether it's networking, whether it's alliances, put a number next to where you're getting your leads. You're going to find, unfortunately, that if you needed 50, you probably only have 20 coming in the front door. So we're already behind the eight ball. But then we have to then say, oh, well, how do I increase that? So where do we find additional people to talk to? Well, certainly you can make outbound calls. It's okay. It's not productive as, you know, as far as use of time. I can give you a script that if you're talking to somebody will get you 7 out of 10 appointments.
Let's do that because I do have consultants who are calling cold. They order a list of leads of businesses, say, manufacturing within their geographical area, and they're calling cold and they're encountering the gatekeepers. Do you have a good script that really is effective in getting an appointment?
I do. We call it the no-pressure cold call. It'll get you 7 out of 10 appointments. And each one of the HMA consultants, I'm sure, does it slightly different. So I'll give you a big picture version. And Michael, if you'd like, for the consultants, I'm happy to send it to you and they can manipulate it any way that they'd like. And better yet, if they want some feedback, I'm happy to give it to them. They could just email me. And here's how it starts off. We have what's called a pattern interrupt. For an HMA consultant, figure out the top three frustrations that your buyers typically have. So Michael, do you know that off the top of your head? Some of the frustrations that a buyer would have?
A buyer of consulting services?
For HMA.
More customers.
Good.
Higher margins.
Okay.
And they don't have time. They're hiring the consultants because the consultants are going to do it for them.
Okay, good. I would say, ring, ring, ring. Hey, Michael, it's Dave. Did I catch you at a bad time?
No, this is okay. Who's this?
This is Dave. Listen, Michael, we haven't talked together in the past, and I know I interrupted your day. Can I take less than 2 minutes? I'll tell you who I am, what I do, and then you can decide if it makes any sense for us to set an appointment at a more appropriate time.
Sure. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I work with entrepreneurs in the marketplace, much like yourself, who are frustrated by the fact that they're not getting enough customers. In today's marketplace, it's getting harder and harder to find good customers, and certainly the ones that we have, we want to leverage. They're also working with people who find it difficult to get the margins that they used to have. They're selling more, maybe, but the margins are shrinking more and more to the point where even if they do have a viable buyer on hand, we tend to negotiate the margins down to razor thin, and we're almost treading. You know, it's like quicksand almost, and there's a lot of frustration. A lot of the owners that I've talked to are trying to do their own marketing, but come to find out, that's not their sweet spot. They're experts at certain areas, but as the business grows, this is not something that I can spend a lot of time on, and the time that I do spend, it's not productive because that's not my thing. You know, I'm great at operations or I'm great at sales, and I find that this is taking an exorbitant amount of time, and quite frankly, the ROI is not there for me. But, Mike, I don't know whether getting more customers customers or increasing your margins or spending time on what really drives the business, those are any concerns that you may be having.
Well, they are, actually.
Well, which one got you at the top of your head?
Getting more customers.
Mike, tell me a little bit more about that. What are you experiencing now? And see, in this portion, I'm having you talk. You're going to tell me your issues. I'm going to let you talk for 2 to 3 minutes. I never solve a problem on the phone because the rule is on the phone. The longer you are on a phone call, the harder it is to get an appointment.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely. You should be off your cold call within 3 to 4 minutes. Don't waste a lot of time because you're going to hear, this sounds really interesting, Dave. Could you send me some literature on that? And that's when you know you've done a poor call. So I would let you talk for a couple minutes and now close for the appointment. Mike, based on what you said thus far, it sounds like I can help you. Why don't you invite me over for 30 minutes or so at your office? Ask me a ton of questions. Dave, how do you increase the margins? How can you get me in front of more customers so I can do what I do well? Who else have you worked with in the local marketplace? And what are some of the results that they've had? And Michael, I'd like to ask you a lot of questions about your business. I mean, what are you currently doing for marketing? How are you getting more customers? What are the challenges that you're facing? And at the end of our discussion, we can decide, hey, let's keep talking. Or, hey, it was worth the half hour, but I see no fit. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. Is that fair?
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com. Sure. So let's say the guy, you've got him talking, he's interested. Why is it so important to meet him face-to-face? Can you set up a future appointment by phone for leveraging time for the salesperson?
We can do it face-to-face or by phone. Given the choice, I certainly would like to do it face-to-face because the rapport skills are better. So this works a lot of different ways. And if you'd like, I'm happy to take the consultants through some of the key phrases of that outbound cold call if you think it would help the consultants.
Do you have some more stuff we can do?
Well, sure. I mean, if you hear some key phrases, and again, I will send this to you. You can put it up on your website. But a preoccupation breaker is, first of all, use first names. I never said, hi, Michael, this is Dave Mattson over at HMA Consultants, and here's what I do. Is it a good time to talk right now? Most people would say, I don't need you. No, it's not a good time. So here are some rules. First names only, okay? Because quickly you're saying, do I know Dave? That's curiosity. Curiosity is your friend on an outbound cold call. Second thing that I want to do is say, Michael, we haven't talked before. You don't know who I am. Can I take 2 minutes? I'll tell you who I am, what I do, and then you can decide whether you want me to call you back at a more appropriate time. I have given you total control. I've also said 2 minutes. The reason why, if you read Buying Psychology, most people don't want to take inbound calls is because once they pick up the phone, they don't think you're going to stop talking. They're looking at their watch saying, well, David Letterman's on soon here. You've been talking for 3 hours. I promised 2 minutes. Everybody was raised to say, give the guy 2 minutes, and I will always honor my time contract.
What happens if you're into it 5 minutes? Do you bring it up?
I absolutely do. I said, Michael, I know, and listen, I appreciate this conversation, and I will keep talking, but I did say up front that I would limit my time because I interrupted your day. And I just want to make sure, is it okay to keep talking, or do you want to set an appointment for me to come see you? I always validate. Here's the rule. Let the prospect make the decision.
But it gives you integrity by asking.
Absolutely. Because, quite frankly, they looked at the watch. And then when they do hang up, even though they had a great conversation, they would say, gosh, that took 10 minutes. There's two types of salespeople. Those that say what they do and then never do what they say. And those who say what they do and then do what they say. And I'd rather be in the second category. So even if you weren't the timekeeper, if we agreed to 2 minutes, I will be the timekeeper. And then I allow you to say, no, let's keep talking. Or, yeah, you're right, hey, thanks. Yeah, just come over and see me. Or, hey, I don't see a need. Whatever the case may be. But this cold call, and Michael, we used to teach like 55 different versions. We only teach this version now because, again, 7 out of 10 appointments is not bad, but it's psychologically based. There's a lot of things in here that sound simple, but they're based in psychology.
So this thing's been tested.
Oh, absolutely.
Millions of times.
As a matter of fact, when we do a 2-day cold calling seminar, because it's just not cold calls, we teach how to get introductions and referrals and everything like that. We'll actually let people leave for an hour because they're doubting Thomas's. It can't be this easy, Dave. And they go and make calls on their client list, and they come back to report, I cannot believe that it was that simple. We'll actually have our presenters make outbound calls on speaker. So there'll be 200 people sitting in a room listening to this call, and they're amazed how simple it is because in their mind they've got the fantasies of being hung up on or people being rude. Well, that's a reaction to probably the way that you're approaching the call. But But if you approach it properly, people are very nice and warm, and they're willing to give you the time.
Now, what have you seen that do for a sales professional? Just that one technique, being able to set, you know, 7 out of 10 calls to really increase that response. Have you seen that to just change lives?
Change lives, yes, because let's do psychologically first. Confidence. My gosh, if you can think about getting 7 out of 10 appointments versus 1 out of 50, your confidence goes up geometrically. Secondly, your time management goes up. If you think about it, if you can be more effective in less time, that's awesome. It also allows you to start the funnel. The death of any salesperson is we don't have enough people to talk to. Let's face it, that's what you're selling. You're selling a marketing strategy that gives us higher margins and more customers to talk to. Do the same thing on us. Be your own consultant. How do I do that? How do I effectively manage my pipeline of opportunities to talk to? If you can increase your win rate to get an appointment 7 out of 10, that ripple effect is just huge as an independent consultant. HMA, it'll increase your business tenfold.
How about the gatekeeper when you know it's a gatekeeper answering the phone or a blocker?
Well, of course, the gatekeeper, there's a lot of different strategies for gatekeepers. You know, and the interesting thing about gatekeepers is that there was no formal meeting with their boss that says, I don't want to talk to anybody. Well, so when they become a gatekeeper, they think that that's their role. I do a lot of different things, but certainly, hey, befriend them. And I'll give you 2 or 3 tactics now. Befriend them. You know, Mary, hey, it's Dave. I was wondering when I can talk to John. You know, what's this in reference to? Well, actually, I've been working with a lot of entrepreneurs like John here locally. Here's what we're doing. And insert those pain statements that I talked to you about a couple minutes ago versus I'm a consultant that does marketing. Here's what we do. She'll automatically decide he doesn't want to talk to you. So befriend them. Here's some other ones. I actually will call and say, Mary, hey, it's Dave Madsen. Listen, Steve doesn't know who I am. As a matter of fact, you know, I've got his name from another owner here locally, and it's a cold call, and I'm trying to figure out the best way for me to talk to him. So could you help me? They'll actually help. Do you know there's a concept called okay, not okay, which means if you struggle a little bit and don't be so slick and ask for help, people will rescue you. I can't tell you how many times, Michael, I've been upgraded to first class as we fly around the country because there's 2 travelers. Let's look at this. One shows up and says, hey, listen, I'm very important. I travel a lot. Upgrade me to first class. And, of course, the person sitting behind that desk has been getting flyer after flyer who's been very unhappy. They're always at fault. And, of course, they've had a tough job. So automatically that person would say, I'm sorry, sir, it's full. But if I did go up and say, well, I'll tell you what, I had a tough day, but I've been watching you over here for 15 minutes. I don't want your job. I mean, you've got a tough job. I mean, so far, everybody's blamed you for everything, including the weather. And she starts laughing. She goes, you're right. Boy, it's getting harder and harder. How can I help you? It may be full, but I was hoping to see if there was an upgrade to first class. My luck would be that it's not going to be there. No, sir, you're in luck.
Oh, that's great.
It just happens that way. Listen, gatekeepers have a pretty poor job. It's not because they're not valuable. It's because, listen, everybody's trying to get through them. It's a tough job. They're juggling 15 calls at once. Befriend them.
But what if you're calling? It's a cold call. You don't know if they're a gatekeeper or not. Do you use the same technique that we did on the first time?
When a gatekeeper picks up, an inbound call can be 1 of 3 people. You could be a friend. You could be a customer. You could be a salesperson. Salespeople always use full names, and they always respond by saying, yes. So if you would say, ring, 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 XYZ company, I would say, hi, is Mike in? Now they're saying, wait a minute now, does this sound like a salesperson? Because salespeople used to say, yes, this is Dave Madsen at Sandler Sales Institute. I'd like Mr. Smith, please. Well, obviously I'm a salesperson, right? But they don't know whether I'm a friend or I am a customer. That's one technique.
All right, let's say I say, XYZ company, may I help you?
Hi, is Mike in? It's Dave.
May I ask who's calling?
Sure, I'm sorry, it's Dave. Hey, your first name?
I'm Mike.
Mike, hold on for 1 second.
Hey, hold on for 1 minute. I'm trying to talk to you for a second. Just wait 1 second.
I'm sorry.
That's good.
Here's the thing. Out of role play for a second, time pressure. People feel pressure. So I'm going to use it to my advantage. When I actually make an outbound call and I hear ring, 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 XYZ company, I actually start a conversation with somebody that's not even there. See what it sounds like. Ring, ring, ring.
Yeah, hold on, guys, for 1 second. I want to talk to Mike first, right before we go. It takes 2 seconds.
Hi, is Mike in? It's Dave. Now, you think I know Mike. Never, ever start to say, well, who is this about? You always say, hold on, please, and you put me right through. I talk to CEOs of Fortune 1000 companies all the time. They always say, how did you get through this? I say, well, it's interesting. I had this make-believe conversation with somebody. They felt pressure. They never asked me any questions.
Why are they feeling pressure?
Because there's a room full of people waiting for me.
Oh, I got you.
Isn't that interesting?
That's a nice one.
Yeah, it's like psychology, right? So they think there's a group of people, and they're not going to be the ones that slowed down the train.
I see. You got another tactic like that?
Oh, sure. We would say, you know, if you were the gatekeeper, I would say, Michael, hi, it's Dave. Michael, I got Steve's number here, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure how I got it, and I'm struggling. I'm trying to figure out how to get a hold of him. Can I just tell you what I do, and then we can figure out how for me to best talk to Steve? Is that fair?
Okay, sure.
Here I go. Well, I got his name here, and here's what I do. I help people who are frustrated by the fact that they don't have enough customers, and you may have, if you've ever heard Michael jumping up and down the fact that, hey, there's not enough customers, or he's angry with the salespeople. Have you ever heard that?
Yes, I have.
Well, that's probably why I got the number then. Now, I've got tons of stuff, but if you were me, how would you get to talk to Michael?
Okay, that's good.
So again, everybody loves to play king or queen for the day. If you were me, what would you do? Don't give you the answer every time.
Okay, let's say you're lining up these appointments, but you want to make sure you're qualifying these. Do you have a qualifying stage within that appointment setting before you go out and schlep and meet the guy?
Sure.
What do you do at that point?
Let's talk about qualifying. First thing, always set the appointment first, qualify second. Let me tell you what I mean, then I'm going to tell you how to do it. First thing is that if you start asking a lot of qualifying questions to try to get the appointment, inevitably you'll break your two-minute rule, but you will always hear, send me literature. Let me take a look at this. Let me look at it. But ask each one of the HMA consultants that are listening to this, out of the last 10 pieces of literature you sent out, how many people called you back and said, oh, my gosh, come see me. It's just overwhelming what you do. I guess the answer is zero. So set the appointment and then qualify. Here's what it sounds like. Because, again, you remember, if you've used my script, you've already told them the top three frustrations that you work with, so they've already inserted themselves. I may say, Michael, in order to make our appointment next Tuesday as effective as possible, could you share with me the top three challenges that you're currently having, getting more customers, and equally as important, keeping the margins high like they used to be in the old days? And now you start talking. Working with an outside marketing company now, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been there? And just out of curiosity, if they could do one thing better, maybe they couldn't, but if they could, what would it be? And now you answer me. And so all of a sudden we've started. See, I want to know, do you have some types of problems that I can solve? Are you working with somebody else right now? And if you love that relationship, why am I there? So I don't want to spin my wheels, as you said. I don't want to waste a lot of time. But I do want to make sure, and again, I hard qualify face-to-face. I'll lightly qualify on the phone to get an appointment. Now, if it's a 16-hour drive, obviously we're going to qualify. And you should have a checklist, by the way, of things that you want to know prior to going to see them if it's a huge investment of time and money on your end. What I find is the more enthusiastic the prospect is, the less qualifying a consultant does. It's a shame, but that's what happens because we get caught up in their enthusiasm. But I have a checklist of three or four things for me, and each of the HMA consultants should have a checklist to say, hey, what would I want to know to make sure that this is a viable candidate for me to go meet? Now, again, that list should shrink if they're right down the road. Time and money increases, so should your questions.
How about a qualifying question, whether you've got to determine, do they have the dollars, the investment for your services? How do you all handle that?
Well, I ask a very simple question, which is, again, if I'm in a sales call, I say, well, it sounds like you've got three major issues that you're trying to tackle, this issue, that issue, and this issue, which we've determined is costing the organization about $500,000 a year. Do you have a budget set aside to deal with some of these issues? I would ask that immediately. To take care of a $500,000 problem, do you have a budget set aside to deal with that? And 9 out of 10 entrepreneurs would say, well, no, I don't. And I would say, well, how do you see yourself moving forward? And now I start to do it because I have projects ranging from 1,000 to 5,000. What should we do? And then they start to ask questions.
That's good. What are some of the different personality types my consultants are going to run into out there? How do you break them down? 10 different ways? 4 main ones?
The personality steps that we use, there's two models that we use, but we'll use DISC. Now, DISC stands for 4 different personality types. D is for dominant. A dominant person is challenge-oriented. They want the bottom line. Give me the facts. I don't want to hear about your weekend. Don't necessarily care about your company. Just hear my problems. How are you going to fix them? What's it going to cost me? Let's cut to the chase. Okay? So those are drivers. You may think some of these people are rude. They may even cut you off mid-sentence because they don't care about it. They got the information that they felt was necessary. Let's keep moving. They're always saying, come on, come on, come on, speed it up. That's a high D. An I is an influencer. They're the ones who are going to want to talk to you about your weekend, tell you some stories. They love jokes. They want to know what other people have experienced from using HMA. why these people are steady Eddies. They don't like change. They want to know, how is it the same? These people incubate. These are the people that get things done, but at their own pace. So as buyers, you want to include them in every step of the way. You want to make sure you send them things ahead of time so they can incubate. If you spring on them, today's the day for the decision, they will not make one. They will not make that decision. They need time. They also want to know who else has used it successfully. Let them talk to them. Let them go see them. But they're going to move a lot slower than you think. If you're a high D selling to an S, you're going to be saying, my gosh, we could have done this months ago. What else do you need? I've told you everything. And they're going to say, you're pushing too hard. You're doing this. So it's a different personality type. And Michael, the last one is a C. That's called compliant. These are people who are introverted, but feeling oriented. So these people are facts and figures oriented. They want to know about the ROI. They want to know about every single step of the project. Okay, so what are you doing next? What are you doing next? What happens then? What's going on over here? So they tend to have everything in order. Their desks are, everything's got its place. Spotless, they know exactly what's what. And if you'd like, again, I'll send that to you so the HMA consultants can have it online. It's quick characteristics of what people's offices look like, what types of clothes they would wear, what types of questions they would ask a consultant. And so you can pick out who's who very quickly.
Oh, that'd be nice. Who would you rather sell to? Or is one personality type easier to sell to than the other? Or does it depend on what your personality type is?
I think it is dependent on your personality. I'm a high D. I think that high D's and I get along great, you know, because we cut to the chase. Don't necessarily have to hear my personal history, my company history. Once you explain the thing, I throw out my solutions. I get you to put your own spin on it, and it's done pretty quickly. The person that would give me a heartache is a high F because they're plotters. They take forever. There's not enough information you could give them. Every time you think you've exhausted the educational step, they want more information. It's a very long road to hoe. But here's the point. Earlier in the interview, I said, you've got to sell the way people want to get information. And that's what I need to do. I need to morph from a D to an S, if you happen to be an S, and provide you with a document ahead of time, give you an agenda so you can incubate it, ask you to think about things, give you small little mini steps versus jumping from step A to step 8. A high D would love that. They don't think steps 2 and 7 are worthwhile anyways. So they'll go right to the end. An S panics. So I need to change the way that I talk. So, yes, it's easier for me on a D, but think about this as an HMA consultant. You don't get paid to sell to people that are exactly the same because that's a small percentage. Real value is selling people who don't have the same personality types.
In the research, have they broken down the population and determined that there's more of one type than the other, or is it pretty equal?
Well, actually, statistically, we have a blend of all four. We all are four. I mean, it's only 2% to 5% or 100% D, 100% I and S and C. We almost have four little people inside of us. So as a blend, most, as an example, executives would be Ds or Cs, and they may not be that naturally, but as they go through the organization, they're forced to cut to the chase, get more done quicker, so they become Ds in their work environment. But a lot of professional salespeople tend to be I's. I mean, they talk and they're people. So the industries actually are broken up. Engineers tend to be C's, right? They tend to be C's. People that have staff jobs within an organization tend to be S's. You know, they have everything has got its place. They do those things. But it's a blend of all four that makes up a total person. I have all four even though I claim to be a D. I am a D, but I have all the other three too.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Please continue to part two. It's Michael with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com in another bonus tip. How would you like to turn your $28 book or ebook or even a concept in your head into a $3,900 information product? I'll provide you the secrets on how to do this. If you'd like a completely free 30-day trial of my system for turning your simple book or even just a concept in your mind into an information product that you can sell for $97, $197, or even as much as $3,900 or more. This system includes a whole range of tricks and tips to help you pack packed your audio program full of great stories that take control of your listeners' brains. My information product creation system comes with my personal guarantee that you'll create an information product worth from $97 to $497 that's designed to sell like hotcakes. This is a 30-day free trial. If you'd like information on this, please email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line, write in all caps, $28 book, and I'll email you information on how to turn your $28 book or even a concept in your mind into a $3,900 information product. Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff, hardtofindseminars.com. Here is another bonus tip and a valuable service that I offer to select clients. If you can talk into an ordinary telephone, you can be selling your own high-priced audio programs in as little as 7 days. This is the easiest way on earth to create a series of powerful audio recordings for your own information product. I call you on an ordinary telephone and interview you live on a series of related hot topics about your niche subject. I take care of all the editing, all the technical stuff, and I give you the finished MP3s or WAV files and audio transcripts. I only have time to give this deluxe personalized service to a few more carefully selected clients. If you're interested in developing and creating your own valuable information products that you could have complete in as short as 7 days and be selling for as high as $300, $500, even $3,900, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, please write info, product, information in all capital. Make sure I have your name and a way to contact you by phone, and we can talk about your specific ideas. Or you may call me at 858-274-7851. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another bonus tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. It's called an audio infomercial. Your audio infomercial, which I create for you, will sell more products of yours faster, easier, and for less cost than any conventional advertising method, and I guarantee it 100%. Imagine catching yourself at concert pitch talking about what makes your business or your product service unique, what makes it special. Imagine taking a professional recording of that perfect sales presentation that I create for you and giving it to your prospect as an audio CD or an internet download from your website. I can do this for you faster than you ever thought possible with my personalized audio informational recording service. If you're interested in this unique service, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, in all capitals, write audio infomercial, and I will get back with you with more information. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. This tip is one that is dear to my heart, and the reason why is because I know what a difference it can make for your business. It has to do with editing your audio recordings. If you are using audio online or offline to sell, market, and educate your prospects, this tip will be the most important tip you ever hear from me. Editing your audio content before you publish it to your site simply gets better results compared to unedited audio content. Think about this. A new song on the radio may be in the editing studio for months before it's released to the public. A new movie may take years in the editing process before it's released to the big screen or on DVD. Well-written sales letters, online promotions, books, and commercials are all meticulously edited to perfection before they are released. You would never dream of releasing an unedited version of any of these sales vehicles, so why would you publish unedited audio? Unedited audio content is abandoned by the listener faster, it produces less sales for you, and it actually destroys your credibility as a publisher. So why are we seeing so much unedited content proliferating the internet? The reason is simple. There are very few people who offer audio editing services who know what they are doing. Editing audio is kind of like plastic surgery. It's part skill and part an art form. You need someone with both the skill to do it and someone who understands marketing and selling. A poor result can be gained by both a skilled surgeon as well as a good technical editor. Who you choose to do your audio editing can be one of the best investments in your business. At HardToFindSeminars.com, we have been editing online and offline web content for 6 years. We have perfected a proprietary editing system that has been proven to get your customers to listen to your audio content longer and to listen to it more often, resulting in more sales for you more often, and with clean edited audio, you can demand more money for your products and services. It's just like in life, you only have one chance to make a first impression. Every time you release and publish unedited audio content, you are projecting a poor, sloppy, I don't care attitude that turns your prospects off. Do your prospects a favor. Service them. Give them your best. Do them a favor by giving them professionally edited audio messages, interviews, teleseminars, and selling promotions by editing your audio. We provide full audio editing services that are fast and at a reasonable rate. We know that editing your audio content can easily pay for itself 20 times over. Call me, Michael Sunoff, for more information at 858-274-7851. I'll spend some time on the phone with you. We'll determine what audio content you're publishing. I'll be glad to offer you a free consultation on my ideas. I'll review some of your audio, and together we'll come up with a solution that gets you better results. Thanks for listening.